for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. President Obama has proposed the biggest expansion of early childhood education since Head Start was launched nearly 50 years ago. Joining me in the studio to talk about the value of universal preschool, Douglas Besharoff of the University of Maryland School of Public Policy, and Amy Scott of American Public Media's Marketplace. From the University of Chicago, Nobel laureate economist James Heckman. I'm sure you'll want to weigh in on our discussion. Give us a call, 800-433-8850. Send us an email, drshow@wamu.org. Follow us on Facebook or send us a tweet. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning, Diane.
Good morning, Diane.
Good to have you with us. First, before we begin our discussion among the three of you, joining us by phone is President Obama's Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan. Thanks for joining us, sir.
Good morning, Diane. Thanks so much for having me back.
Tell me how this program differs from Head Start.
Well, first of all, what we want to do is make sure that all of our children are entering kindergarten ready to be successful. And I think for far too long in education, we've been playing catch-up. So if we could create much greater access, particularly amongst low-income families and moderate-income families, to high-quality pre-K programs and then to full-day kindergarten, I think this is an absolute game-changer in education. And you heard me talk many times, Diane, about the opportunity gap. We have to close the opportunity gap if we're serious about closing the achievement gap. And getting our babies off to a great start is the best investment we can make.
So why not concentrate just on low-income areas?
Well, we want to focus first on low-income and moderate-income areas, again, to make sure that those children have access. But the goal long-term is to make sure all of our children are entering kindergarten, already, again, with their academic and social-emotional skills intact.
But don't you get into a lot more political problem areas if you make this universal rather than concentrating on areas where it's clearly needed?
Well, again, we are absolutely going to concentrate on the areas where they need it the most, in the low-income communities and the moderate-income communities. So that is absolutely our focus.
But you're making it universal, are you not?
Well, again, the primary focus, Diane, is on those low- and moderate-income families who, in far too many communities for decades, have been denied the kind of high-quality early learning opportunities that can transform those children's life chances. Mm-hmm. And study after study has shown that for every dollar we invest at the front end, we as a society get back about $7 in the back end. So this is the right thing to do for children, which is obviously first and foremost the most important thing, but this is the right thing to do for our country as well.
You know, I've never quite understood how you measure that. How do you know that putting $7 in is going to bring you $10 at the other end?
Well, again, the investment is actually better than that, Diane. For every dollar you put in the front end, you get back $7 on the back end. So the return is fantastic. You have some fantastic panelists there. James Heckman has studied this stuff. He's an extraordinary academic researcher, and he can walk you through the math of this. But when you have children who are prepared to enter kindergarten, they're much less likely to drop out later. They're much more likely to go to college. They're much less likely to become a teenage parent. They're much less likely to go to jail. They're much less likely to go on welfare. And so the long-term dividends, the long-term benefits for society are fantastic. And why I appreciate the president's leadership on this so much, Diane, is the benefits we won't see, obviously, till long after he and I are gone from Washington. And too often, politicians, you know, think about the short term and what's going to help them, you know, for the next election, whatever. This is a long-term play for the country, and ultimately, I think, could be a hugely important part of President Obama's legacy.
Here's an email from Vicki, who says, if Head Start works so well, Why is it the current education system is considered such a failure?
Well, I think Head Start, Secretary Sebelius, my good friend and partner who runs HHS, is working very hard to increase the quality of Head Start. And again, the goal here is not just access. The goal has to be access to high-quality early learning programs, and that's critical in everything we do.
And what do you think the plan's going to cost?
So stay tuned. We'll be putting out our budget, the President will, in the next couple weeks. And this is a significant investment, but again, I think it's the best investment we can make. And the return on that investment for taxpayers and for country and for young people and their families, we think has a chance to be just extraordinary.
You know, you've had Senator Johnny Isaacson, Republican of Georgia, saying that his state's program, which offers free kindergarten, pre-kindergarten to all four-year-olds, works. Because it started locally, is funded locally, and doesn't have a single dime of federal money. So why wouldn't you just leave it to the states?
Well, Georgia's done a fantastic job, and Senator Isaacson's a good friend and partner. Our issue, Diane, is that the majority of our young people from disadvantaged communities across this country do not have access. And so what we want to do is put some incentives out there for more states to create access. And again, if we don't do this, if we continue to have children entering kindergarten far behind, we are constantly playing catch-up. We have to get out of the catch-up business. And when the majority of young people in this country desperately need these opportunities and we're not providing them, we pay a great price for that. And so the opportunity here is to take to scale what we know is working.
Okay, and one last question, going back to the very first question, how does the president's plan for universal preschool differ from Head Start?
Again, the goal is to try and get many more students engaged here. This will strengthen Head Start as well. But we just simply don't have enough children in this country with access to high-quality early learning programs. We also, I just want to quickly add, Diane, want to try and encourage and incentivize more states to go to full-day kindergarten programs. Only about 6 in 10 children around the country have access to full-day K. So we have to look, you know, starting with our babies, our, you know, at zeros, all the way through kindergarten. If we can make sure students, young people, and our children, our families who need the most help have access to high quality all the way through, that's a life-transforming opportunity.
Secretary of Education Arnie Duncan, thanks for being with us on President's Day.
Thanks so much. I look forward to the rest of your panel.
All right. Thanks again. And now, Amy Scott, turning to you, talk about the state of the nation's government-funded preschool programs today.
Well, Head Start, you talked about, has been criticized for not having lasting gains for students. It's a program, a preschool or pre-kindergarten program for low-income and disadvantaged children. And the Department of Health and Human Services' own research recently concluded that the gains, the benefits, did not last for the most part beyond third grade. So if you compared children who did Head Start versus those who didn't, there wasn't much that you could tell lasted beyond that year.
So how do you think the president's program could or might address that cutoff?
Well, one thing that they're saying is that they want to pay preschool teachers more like what a kindergarten or elementary school teacher is making, which according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics is about twice as much. So if you can pay better, in theory, you could attract better, more qualified teachers.
Turning to you, James Heckman, I gather you like the president's plan. Tell us why.
I think the president's plan is very ambitious, and I think it's founded on fact. I think it's founded on very hard evidence, some of which I've contributed to. I think the reason why I like the program is that it's actually enriching the kind of offerings that young children are getting, disadvantaged young children are getting. It's actually enriching Head Start in many dimensions. First of all, I think it's going to really insist on basic quality components that I think are currently missing in many Head Start centers. Secondly, it's going to start earlier in life. And I think that early start has been documented. So there are features that are found even in interventions in children 0 to 3, even in prenatal interventions, teaching young mothers not to drink, not to smoke, to take care of their children. So it's really a much more comprehensive program. And finally, on the cost side, it's universal. But be careful. If you look closely at the proposal, it also talks about a sliding fee schedule. So yes, you can make it available, but richer families, wealthier families really have to pay their money. And I think that's the important thing when we talk about this program as opposed to others. It's a significant extension, evidence-based, and I think it's actually going to be very fruitful in terms of the economic benefits and the social benefits. And that is, it's a very unusual kind of government program. And this is something that I don't think is properly appreciated. Most government programs have so-called trade-offs. You know, you help the rich, but and you may stimulate the economy, but the poor don't benefit. This program has a very, this class of programs has a very unusual quality. It simultaneously is economically efficient, and I can give you a lot of evidence on that. It pays off 7 to 10% per annum each dollar invested. So it's the stock market between 1945 and 2008 was like 7% of the same range. Secondly, it actually reduces inequality and promotes social mobility. So it's both equity improving and efficiency improving.
James Heckman, he's a Nobel Award-winning professor of economics at the University of Chicago. Short break here. When we come back, we'll talk with Doug Besharov, who may have a somewhat different perspective. Stay with us. We're talking about President Obama's plan to provide high-quality preschool education to all children. There have been lots of comments of support. There have also been some others not quite so supportive. Here in the studio, Amy Scott. She's education correspondent for American Public Media's Marketplace. Douglas Besharov is professor at the University of Maryland School of Public Policy. He's also with the American Enterprise Institute. And joining us from a studio at the University of Chicago, James Heckman. He's a Nobel Prize-winning professor of economics at the university there. Doug Besharov, what's your view of the president's plan?
Boy, he's, of course, not the first president who's proposed universal preschool. It was a main element of Hillary Clinton's campaign. It was a major effort under the Clinton administration. This is, in fact, it started in the 1970s with the Universal Care Act under Richard Nixon. Each time the advocates overclaimed the benefits, each time they underestimated the cost, and each time they lost the electorate, most recently in California, where there was a referendum on universal pre-K, They were going to tax the rich, people making over $200,000 a year, and provide, quote, universal pre-K. That referendum, even in tax-the-rich Haven, California, lost 2-1. 67% voted against it. And that's because inherent in the program are contradictions, some of which you pointed out in your questions to Secretary Duncan. Number one, we still don't know how to help low-income kids very well. This $7 benefits, this is a very controversial number. This is not the place to go into it, but there are people who think that's not the case. The ability of the government to run Head Start is quite questionable. More than that, though, as Jim Heckman suggested, implicit in this plan to keep its costs low are mandated sliding scales for the middle class. Once the middle class finds out, number one, that it will lose choices, that it will have to put its kids, its preschoolers, into one program in the neighborhood as opposed and at the public school as opposed to choosing where they best put their children, I think they'll lose more support. So to complete this, I wish they would concentrate on helping the low-income kids where the challenges are greatest. We don't know exactly how to do it. And I noticed that Secretary Duncan, every time you said, well, aren't you going to concentrate on low-income, he stuck in moderate income, because these plans go to $100,000 or more of family income. And I'm afraid this is just politics again.
Amy Scott, what is the rationale for not simply concentrating on low-income students where it would seem to be most useful?
Well, I think I might disagree that this program doesn't focus on low income. The way it was pitched in the State of the Union made it sound like universal preschool for all kids. But immediately following the speech, the White House put out a document spelling out some of the details. This is really targeting families that make at or below 200% of the poverty line. So for a family of four, that means families earning up to $46,100 per year.
So not $100,000.
That may be for more children. I'm not sure about the numbers Doug was using. But so that is considered moderate income. But this is not a universal preschool plan. The goal, I think, is to expand it for middle-income children. But on the face of it, I don't see this as universal.
James,
Go ahead. Because in the president's plan, besides the State of the Union, besides the increase of either Head Start or whatever it is to twice the poverty line, they talk in writing about providing subsidies to states to provide child care under sliding scales for higher income. And that's one of the reasons why Secretary Duncan said he actually didn't have a budget number, because it's going to go far beyond this twice the poverty line.
James Heckman, wouldn't you think that this would be introduced slowly and little by little, perhaps targeting low-income children first and then moving on up, or how do you see it?
Well, I think Secretary Duncan already said it, and I would reaffirm that. I think it's in the logic of all of the early intervention literature that the most disadvantaged benefit. And the expansion to larger populations, richer populations, would actually occur as individuals pay for that. That's one point. And so I do think that the wisdom, the logic, virtually all the studies show the great benefits for the most disadvantaged children. I think that's just the pure logic of what's being proposed. Let me make one comment, though, in terms of what Doug, my old friend Doug, has said. I don't think the studies of ABC and Perry are controversial. I think the arguments that have been raised against them are somewhat specious. I think that people have said samples are very small. Well, small samples essentially would bias against finding any results. And in fact, the results have been found from randomized trials where children are followed into age 40, and now plans will follow to age 50. We have very comprehensive measures of their crime. We have comprehensive measures of their earnings and so forth. So I would defend very strongly these high rates of return, because they actually have been carefully evaluated. They include the cost of taxation. They include all of the cost of the public of actually taxing and using tax dollars.
What about the issue of the benefit sort of stopping as a third grade?
No, the benefit doesn't stop at third grade. In fact, what you can see, I mean, first of all, let me just go back to the Head Start evaluation. Many people have focused on the recent Head Start evaluation, saying there's no effect. I think the Head Start evaluation is an example of the folly of uncritical use of so-called randomized trials. If you look at the treatment group in Head Start and you look at the control group in Head Start, many of the control group people had other Head Start or other preschool programs. What was being compared was apples versus apples. So if you said, yes, there's no difference between apples, that's true. But a competent study of the Head Start program, even the randomized trial, remains to be done. So that's the first point. Secondly, I would simply say 40 years ago, when the first Head Start evaluations were conducted by Westinghouse, the Head Start evaluations were showing no gains in IQ, and therefore many people said in the late 60s, early 70s, kill Head Start, and hence the notion that somehow the gains were overstated. What we've come to understand is that the greatest benefits of these programs are not on pure academic measures. The Perry program that I talked about had no effects on IQ. We've been looking under the wrong street lamp. What we can find is actually that there are significant benefits to social and emotional skills. And the recent work is also showing into the adult years improvements in health. So actually, I would argue that the returns are understated. We see lower body mass indices. We see much higher good cholesterol. We see in many dimensions, and those haven't even been factored in yet into the cost-benefit calculations.
Doug Bergeron.
I was trained as a lawyer, and there are good lawyers and bad lawyers. The bad lawyers only cite the cases on their side. The good lawyers cite all the cases and distinguish the bad cases or the cases off their side. There is a giant literature on both sides of this question. The RAND Corporation has reexamined the cost-benefit analysis. But this is not the place, this program, to get into the interstices of these research studies. The bigger question for America is, we have a program for children under poverty. It's called Head Start. Itself needs giant improvement. Perhaps the only way to improve Head Start is to promise a Head Start-like experience for the rest of the country. And that's part of what this proposal is. But please have as part of this proposal fixing Head Start. And that's not part of it because you can't make the sale that way. Every other time the advocates have tried this, which is Head Start works or pre-K works, make it universal, oh, and we'll fix Head Start later, that political argument has failed. We ought to realize that, that the political argument here is much more complicated. And if we're going to make progress, maybe we should start with a much more improved system already that we already have.
Amy Scott, is income the issue? We have an email here from Kevin who says the well-off do not need this program. They already send their children to the best preschools.
Right. And I would say I'm not sure where Doug's assertion that they will lose choice comes from, because I think there will be nothing to stop middle and higher income people from continuing to send their children to whatever preschool they see fit. I think where this does begin to approach universal preschool is by making it available, affordable to the lower and middle income families. As President Obama pointed out in his speech, and I'm well aware as the mother of a two-year-old, a private preschool can cost a few hundred dollars.
To be here this morning.
That's right. He's getting childcare here, thanks to your generous staff. This preschool can cost a couple hundred dollars a week. And so income, I think, is the big barrier.
The other question, James, is the experience of preschool different in urban or rural areas? Do we have any data on that?
There are some studies. There's a paper by Maria Fitzgerald in the Berkeley Economics and Public Policy Journal suggesting some of the biggest benefits, for example, of the Georgia program came in rural areas, providing access and the like. But could I go back and respond to Doug just for one question?
Sure.
I think that he's making an argument by innuendo, and I actually think it's really incorrect. It actually frames the discussion incorrectly. He's presenting as if somehow we've looked only at one or two programs and are presenting only the results from the most successful. As Secretary Duncan has pointed out, high quality is the key word here in the making early childhood programs. If we actually put in very low quality programs, just give access, just kind of give a little bit to everybody and not really guarantee quality, we can actually harm children. We know that. Craig Ramey and many of the other people know that. So the emphasis is on quality. We know that when quality programs that have been followed up are consistently showing, when they have long-term follow-ups, significant benefits, substantial benefits that survive a variety of robust tests. But let me appeal just one last thing. Oops, can I? Okay. I think what we're talking about is parenting. And so what I'm saying is really understand that a good preschool is really emulating what a good family does. And I think that's what we have to understand. And the evidence on parenting is overwhelming. We have it anecdotally, and we have it experimentally, and we have it empirically. Sorry.
James Heckman, he's Nobel Prize winning professor of economics at the University of Chicago. And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. So, Doug Beshroff, you've heard James's comments. What's your reaction?
The question of quality is quite challenging. Secretary Duncan just now said that the kinds of teachers he wanted would be paid twice what Head Start teachers would be paid. There's another side to this political process. We are really talking about making preschool a part of the public school system, and paying preschool teachers school teacher salaries, which are in many places twice as high as childcare salaries. That will raise the cost of this program. So that's one of the reasons why the unions are in favor of this, because it's a very nice way to grow the unions. I want to emphasize, I'm not going to go into the argument about what studies are what. Can anyone really believe that if the government goes into pre-K, the cost of pre-K for all Americans won't go up?
Here's an email from Ken in Cary, North Carolina. He says, I'm wondering about the difference between preschool and daycare. There's a huge industry providing daycare to working parents entirely at private profit. Can your guests address the question of how that industry might oppose a publicly provided universal early learning program? Amy Scott.
Well, from my understanding, this proposal would also expand early Head Start, which is daycare for toddlers, and would allow, I believe, private providers to compete for funding for that. So there's something in it for daycare providers as well. I would think maybe one of your other guests might know more about this.
This is one of the problems about fitting this all together. Daycare tends to be at least 9 to 5, 12 months a year, because it's for working moms. Preschool will likely be 9 months a year. In the programs we have, mostly pure, true preschool, they're 3 or 4 hours a day. So there'll be a giant problem in connecting the preschool experience for working moms with full-time daycare, which is also needed.
James is shaking his head no.
Well, many of the programs that have been evaluated are actually full-time. But I think it's important to understand that warehousing childcare programs are fundamentally different from these early childhood programs that the president is proposing. It's really a question of quality, and part of the dimension of quality is length. For example, some of the programs have been full-time. But I do believe it's an important issue that frequently gets separated. namely the provision of child care for working women, from the issue of child development. I think these two have to be fused together, and I think the president's program actually does that. So I don't think there's a trade-off here in any fundamental sense. I think we probably do want to have more comprehensive programs. They've been shown to work. But I also think that we should really contrast child care from quality preschool and quality early childhood interventions.
But at the same time, Amy, shouldn't there be concerns about requirements for highly paid preschool teachers? I mean, how different is the challenge teaching preschoolers from teaching high schoolers? I mean,
well, I think it depends.
Isn't there a huge challenge there as well?
Absolutely. I have to say, I have some personal experience with this. My mother directed what I would say was a high quality nursery school for 25 years. I know how low paid preschool teachers are firsthand. And so I think the argument that paying teachers better would attract more qualified teachers seems to be a strong one. And I think what we're talking about is requiring a higher level of education and training.
Amy Scott, she's education correspondent for Marketplace. Short break. When we come back, your calls and emails.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at gatesfoundation.org, by the Joyce Foundation, working to improve the quality of life in the Great Lakes region. Learn more at joycefdn.org. And by the Grantham Foundation for the Protection of the Environment, supporting strategic communications and collaboration to address the world's pressing environmental problems. This is NPR.
On the next Fresh Air, Richard Blanco, who read his poem One Today at President Obama's second inauguration last month. Blanco is the fifth and the youngest of America's inaugural poets. He's also the first Latino. His parents emigrated from Cuba, and the first openly gay writer chosen for the role. Join us.
Welcome back. As we talk about elements of the president's plan for what he hopes will be universal preschool, making that available to all children, and just to remind ourselves, daycare is for working parents and not just for working moms. Let's go first to South Dennis, Massachusetts. Good morning, Ian. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
I guess the first point I wanted to bring up is just my situation. My daughter's 4.5 years old, and my wife and I, she's in the military, and we had to balance daycare costs versus me going back to work. So for a while, I've been at a stay-at-home dad for 4.5 years, and luckily, what the Coast Guard does for us, they give us a stipend every year of around $6,000, and we can choose where we can go as far as our daycare. And that significantly improved our family life in the sense that our daughter is getting a good education, a head start, I guess you could say. And I'm also able to go to work and continue my education at the same time. Now, I think that's one point that wasn't brought up, is the parent is able to go to work if they choose. I don't think that people should receive, money towards daycare just for the parents to go home, you know, watch morning television and pick up their daughter or their children at the end of the day just so they can have a break. I think that it should be sort of an investment for the parent also to further their employment and their education if they choose so.
All right. Thanks for calling, Amy. I somehow don't really see that this is what this program's all about.
Right. I think, again, there you're seeing the difference between daycare and preschool. Preschool is about child development, preparation for school. Daycare is, you know, so that a parent can work and so the child has someone to take care of them.
There's another element that you raised during the break, and that's home visitation. Talk about that.
Right. I was interested to see that part of this proposal includes expanding support for voluntary home visiting programs, which apparently the White House has already invested $1.5 billion in.
And how would that work?
Well, I did some reporting on one of these programs in Cincinnati. It's called Every Child Succeeds, and it involves a social worker or a trained volunteer visiting the home of at-risk parents. These tend to be teenage moms from pregnancy through age 3 in this case. And they work with the mom on things like prenatal care, how to talk to a child, how to read books. And it's really, James Heckman mentioned parenting, this being about parenting. It's trying to teach some of those parenting skills that also are shown to help get children off to a good start and to help the parents. So it's sort of a two-generation approach.
All right, and let's go to Little Rock, Arkansas. Good morning, Darlene.
Good morning, Diane. It's a pleasure to be on your great show.
Thank you.
I would like to offer a couple of comments that I wish your panelists would address. The simpler one is, let's talk about the nature of kindergarten in the 21st century. To me, it's basically the new first grade, and I think folks around the country need to understand the demands that will be on young children as they enter kindergarten. That's not the cut and paste days of before. My second comment goes to the remarks about the seeming failure of any long-term benefit for children who have been able to participate in Head Start programs, noting that after third grade, where's the growth? We need to look at the differences in the circumstances. At Head Start, there were 2 adults in the classroom for 20 children. Today, how many children over 20 are in the classroom with 1 teacher? The children are likely attending a neighborhood school in a high-poverty area, and we already know how difficult and challenging education is in all the classrooms there.
Doug Beshraw, those are some good points, especially those large classrooms that teachers have to confront.
Well, the tricky part about this, quote, Head Start fade-out, is it's not that the Head Start kids forget. It's that the other kids catch up, which is to say the other kids start scoring at the same level in the third grade. And it puts into question the model of, yes, yes, indeed. It's not that people forget what they had in Head Start. The fade-out effect is that the differences between the Head Start kids and the non-Head Start kids disappear as the non-Head Start kids catch up. Jim Heckman and I haven't agreed on much, but I sure hope he'll agree on that one. The issue that I'd like, Darlene raises a very, go ahead.
Okay, I want to get James to comment on that fade-out effect.
Well, let me be very clear. There are no long-term evaluations of an experimental nature on the Head Start program. Some that have been non-experimental have shown long-term effects with no question of fade-out. So I do think the issue of fade-out is a little bit specious, and it's still an open question. But in the more enriched programs, the ones where a classroom size is smaller, where you're having more teachers per child, sometimes as few as three, when you're down at three children per child in the very earliest years, have shown very, very great and lasting effects. So I do think it's somewhat curious. Could I just make a comment about what Amy was saying about parents?
Go ahead.
No, I think it's very important that we understand these programs are working with the family. That involves the parents and the children. And some of the biggest improvements have also come in parenting, which then lasts the lifetime with the child. So not only are you producing children who have some motivation, but you're producing parents who now know better how to understand, how to rear children and have guidance. So I think it's important to understand the multiple facets of these programs.
All right.
I think President Obama's talked about that.
Here's an email from Chris in St. Louis, Missouri. I've read evidence that adults who had Head Start are significantly less likely to be incarcerated and more likely to be in stable marriages. So the benefits of Head Start are later in life. Can you comment on this, James?
Yes, there are, as I say, some of the non-experimental studies that track people into adulthood using non-experimental data for sure have shown exactly those kinds of benefits for certain groups. So I do think it's premature to say that Head Start has failed. But I also think that President Obama's program is actually thinking of enriching Head Start and offering a portfolio of programs that are better than what we currently have.
All right.
And one last question, if I could, and this is on salaries and so forth. The argument was made, well, somehow the proposed idea is that proposed program is going to increase the salary of daycare workers. One dimension of quality, one dimension of what a high-quality program is the quality of the personnel working with the children. So I would argue that if we want to get really high-quality children, high-quality workforce in the early years, I think we're really going to have to pay for what we ask for.
And on that very point, we've had numerous emails about the cost. And Brooks in Greenville, South Carolina, is saying, given the large national debt, should this even be on the table? He or she is skeptical of the government's ability, and maybe the private sector could do it better. Doug?
Well, I know what my kids pay for childcare, but before coming over here this morning, I went online and looked at some of the national reports. And for what some people would call so-so daycare, the average cost for daycare full-time, full-year for a four-year-old is about $10,000. As you move up either in urbanicity, New York, Washington, as you move up in quality, you quickly hit $20,000 per year per child. We live in a world in which federal workers are about to get a 5% cut in salary. $73 or $83 billion is about to be cut from the federal budget. I don't think it's realistic to think that this proposal is going to pass while there's a Republican House. The question is, what do we do with this excitement and interest in Head Start and pre-K? And I hope we use this time to take a good look at the issues and improve both programs.
Doug Beshrov, he's professor at the University of Maryland School of Public Policy, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. And let's take a caller in South Lake, Texas. Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Diane. Thank you for taking my call.
Surely.
I was driving along and needed to pull over because I heard another caller call in with the suggestion that we all need to face the fact that kindergarten is the new first grade. And it seemed to be her viewpoint that we need to push our kids stronger, harder, faster, earlier. And I would say that my understanding is that that would go counter to what is proven to work in countries like Germany, Switzerland, and Finland, where they have significantly higher rates of literacy, but they start their children reading and doing genuine academic work later. Rather, they have them integrate well socially. They have them engage in very significant creative play. They involve a lot of music, art, and physical activity. And those children end up surpassing ours significantly later.
What about that, James Heckman? Rather than concentrating on skills like reading and math and that sort of thing, what about just ordinary, wonderful play?
Play is amazingly productive, and it's been documented to have lasting effects in terms of, but it's the larger issue. It's the larger issue of saying we want to think about evaluating these interventions and all human skill interventions, not just in terms of test score or just academic reading, but also in terms of the engagement of the individual in the society and in the school, for that matter. So the Perry kids, for example, were no smarter in terms of IQ, but they actually had higher achievement tests because they studied harder, they were engaged. It's that emotional engagement, the attachment, that I think is missing ingredient from the discussion.
Amy Scott.
One thing I'm curious about, I look forward to learning more, is about how the federal government will determine quality. One of the things that they say is that programs would have to have a rigorous curriculum. And it does raise some questions. Does that mean we're going to be doing standardized testing for four-year-olds?
No.
I think James is saying no.
James is saying no.
I think some people do worry about the federal government's involvement, given the emphasis on standards and testing in the elementary grades.
Doug Bezhroff.
I think Leslie's comment opens a whole nother door here. I think the term, and I'm guessing here, and I should know better, is redshirting, which is the case that for many middle-class families now, the objective is to slow down their children's entry into kindergarten. Many children are being held back and not sent to kindergarten until they're five, because many parents think their kids do better when they're a little older in these schools. Now, this is not about, I hear Jim sighing there, Al Gore and so forth, which is really, it cost him the election, don't do it. This is only another door to what parents see. And what they see is schools pushing too soon, and they see their children doing better if they're a little older in school. This is not about the Head Start debate. It's not about pre-K. But it's about how complicated these years are and how little attention the policymakers are giving to these things that American parents are grappling with today.
All right. And finally, to Cincinnati, Ohio. Good morning, Helen. You're on the air.
Okay, I have just a comment. I am a volunteer, and I actually go into the kindergarten of same teacher in a low income area, and I evaluate how much the children, using exactly the same test material, I evaluate what the children know about the alphabet and about their surroundings, and about rhyming words and. The same test every year, and last year I noticed this year I noticed a difference in the children, and so I decided to do my own little survey, and I asked the children, you know, if they did real well, and I said, I said you really know your alphabet. I said did you go to school last year, and they said yes, and that was the prominent difference, and it gets the kids in it, and I talked to the teacher later on, and I said, you're going to have a good year. And she said, yes, she was delighted because the children were so far ahead.
There is a big push in Cincinnati to get kids to kindergarten ready to learn, Success by Six, run by the United Way. And it's a collaboration with many organizations. So it's interesting that this volunteer is seeing results.
But you know, a lot of that, isn't that done at home? Isn't that done with parental or, you know, somebody's involvement? I mean, I do wonder about placing that, saying that all comes from preschool education.
Well, I think the issue that you're raising is the difference between, and we use these code words, middle class and low income. There are some parents, they tend to be middle class, who enrich their children's experience from the day they're born, in fact, while in the womb, right, with Mozart radio playing and all that business. And there are other parents who do not provide the kind of support and nurturing and education before school. And the idea of Head Start has always been to make up the difference. And that's part of the issues here, which is we have some parents who are doing all this enriching, some parents who aren't. And we're trying to fit them both into the same kind of program. We're going to have to make adjustments, and we'll make them.
Do you think we'll make them, James, very quickly, please?
Well, I think the proposal of the president is exactly to offer a flexible menu. I really disagree with the idea that this is a one-size-fits-all. In fact, the proposal that the president has offered is actually asking for local incentives, local initiatives, to let 100 flowers bloom to see which model works best. So I think that the idea that somehow there's a single program. Precisely, I agree with Doug, though. What we have in America is a gap between the middle class and the disadvantaged. And these programs go towards filling that gap.
James Heckman, he's Nobel Prize winning professor of economics at the University of Chicago. Amy Scott is education correspondent for American Public Media's Marketplace. Doug Besharov is at the University of Maryland and the American Enterprise Institute. Thank you all so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening. I'm Diane Rehm.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from